Welcome to the Officer Media Group Roll Call Podcast. Officer Roll Call is meant to inform and entertain. Now, let's get into this episode.
Welcome to the lineup, Officer Magazine's roundup of this week's police and law enforcement news. I'm your host, Joe Vince, assistant editor for Officer Magazine. And with me this week, as always, a man who needs no further introduction, but is getting one anyways. My co-host, retired Lieutenant Frank Borelli.
Man, you need more coffee or what? What's with the stutter?
I know. I'm trying to do too much right now. Trying to be too cute with the opening, and still waking up a little.
You've actually introduced me. Usually, you're like, and with me today is, and then I got to take over. And you just threw it all out there today, man. Great job. I like that.
Always trying to mix it up, keep it fresh for the audience.
Nice.
Let's see. We'll get started right away. Packed show as always. Our first story, and this week was just a deadly week for law enforcement. In between, from the time of our last recording to today, almost a half dozen line of duty deaths, really punctuated by a tragedy in New York, in Syracuse, where a Syracuse police officer and a, I hope I'm pronouncing this properly, Onondaga, county deputy, were shot and killed in what is being described as an ambush by the suspect, who investigators are trying to determine if he had held a long time grudge for law enforcement, or was upset over a recent arrest. But what is clear is that after a traffic stop, this individual basically lured and baited police into this trap at his residence, where he waited for officers with an illegal rifle and at least 40 rounds of ammunition. It's another example of just how much of a problem ambushes and these surprise attacks are becoming for police.
So I want to also, Joe, before we start commenting on that particular ambush, I want to introduce our second article as well, which is a story again out of New York, in Albany, where an armed suspect was fatally shot after wounding an Albany police officer in an ambush. Here's the thing, and the reason why I wanted to comment on them together. Years ago, and I remember this being taught to me very carefully, there was an article about four officers sitting around outside of a Starbucks, and they are just chilling, right? They're just, they got a break from the momentary break of the whole world's not trying to kill me, or so they thought, and they're sitting around having coffee and whatever, and a guy walks up and just starts shooting them. I mean, typically, so look, I was in the military. An ambush is a trap you set up and you get people to come into. That's not always true in law enforcement. Sometimes the ambush is when you're sitting still and somebody comes up to you and attacks you without any warning at all. And I'm not sure if ambush is the correct terminology for that type of attack, but it's the best thing we come up with. And unfortunately, they are not going away. We still see both. We still see officers that are just doing their thing, minding their business, and out of the blue, somebody comes up and attacks them. And we see officers that are being dispatched to false calls, or, you know, they're getting dispatched for something that doesn't carry any violent connotation. And they show up, and all of a sudden, they're under attack. That's the true ambush style thing. We've got to stay alert, but there's no way to avoid them.
And it's you're seeing too, it's the firepower that these suspects have. It's not just a guy with a handgun. In the case in Syracuse, here he was with a rifle and at least 40 rounds of ammunition. You know, it becomes, we talked, I think we talked in a previous episode about not getting into a fair fight. In these cases, police are going up against suspects who really, it's sort of an even fight as far as the type of weaponry and the amount of ammunition they might have when these happen.
Well, and it's a rare, interesting moment when you and I really thoroughly disagree about something. I don't want to overly focus on the weapon the guy had. Look, there's 88 million gun owners in this country, and over 60 million of them own more than one rifle. A rifle's a rifle or is a rifle. I don't like the fact that people use a rifle to attack police officers when the police officers aren't walking around with a rifle to shoot back with, because yes, there is an imbalance of firepower, but I don't want to get hung up on the firepower. If you're a patrol officer sitting in your driver's seat, and I walk up to your window and I pull out a .22 revolver and start shooting you through the window, that's just as devastating as me walking up to your window and pulling up an AR-15 and starting to shoot through your window. Does one system deliver more energy? Yes. Are both going to kill you? Yes. Is the ambush still the challenge because you have to avoid the first shot being fired? Yes. It doesn't matter what the gun the bad guy has is if we can keep the bullets from hitting us or them from shooting. Those are our bigger challenges. Because short of eradicating the Second Amendment, we're just not going to do away with guns in society. And in the United States of America, that's just never going to happen. We really need to focus on the tactics and the awareness. And, you know, there's an old joke about how much out of the way do you have to get? How much does the bullet have to miss you by? It doesn't matter. It just has to miss. I don't care if it takes hair off of my arm when it's going by. It just has to miss. That's where, to me, the focus has got to be. The awareness, the ability to get out of the way, the ability to find cover, the ability to engage the bad guy, the ability to neutralize the bad guy. We need to be getting on those. And understand, you know, earlier you said something about a fair fight. And yes, the statement is, if you find yourself in a fair fight, you failed to properly plan beforehand. I don't ever want to be in a fair fight because that's right. Not a good thing. I want to always have the imbalance. My surprise is a huge factor in all of these ambush situations. The officers don't even see it coming. That puts them a second behind in the fight, and 1 second's enough to get you killed.
And I don't disagree with you as far as the type of weaponry. I think the biggest thing for me is the amount of ammunition, really. And again, it's not as a comment as far as, you know, gun restrictions or anything like that, but it's really just to illustrate just how long some of these suspects can keep the fight going. Because, you know, that they have extended magazines or they've stockpiled the ammunition, and in these surprise attacks, it not knowing really again, how long these suspects can continue the firing on police. And like you said, it goes to the tactics that police need to, the training that they need to have as far as being able to engage and neutralize a suspect as quickly as possible.
All right, I'm going to throw this out there, and then we can move on. You got to quit watching CNN because you're using all these hot button control, gun control terms, and it's just going to drive me nuts because I know it's not how you mean it. It's just the commonly used vernacular when we discuss the topic. And I do feel remiss because the third story that we have to talk about actually has to do with another ambush situation.
Yes. And this is out of Nevada where this was Sparks Police Department had released body camera footage of, an ambush attack where a gunman opened fire on officers and a Washoe County sheriff's deputy. And again, it's another example of I like you said, it's not going away as far as ambush goes and these surprise attacks. We've talked about it before. It's the brazenness. It's the escalation that suspects are bringing to calls. Like you said, it wasn't something that this could have been. Is, you know, the person was being pulled over simply for a traffic offense, or what have you, and it suddenly becomes a huge felony. You know, it becomes people ending up being shot and wounded, and in some cases, being killed. And it's something the FBI and police organizations for the past few years have been discussing it, as far as it being an increasing problem. I guess what I'm trying to get at is, I know you've said it's not going away. What can officers do to better, I guess, protect themselves in these cases? Or is it just, this is just, you know, it's the price of doing business?
To some extent, there's awareness is huge, right? And we used to talk about this all the time in training. If you're going on a domestic call, there's always potential for domestics to be violent. Mm-hmm. So you don't pull up in the driveway with your lights and siren on. You park two blocks away and you've turned off your siren five blocks away. So hopefully the people are surprised when you knock on the door and you don't stand in front of the door because people tend to shoot through doors, all this stuff, right? So the awareness, planning, tactics, all of that stuff plays a role in minimizing our risk. And I'm not saying any of these officers have done anything wrong. You can do everything 100% right and still get caught in a bad position because you don't have all the information. And everything we do is based on the best information we have. The thing that I like about this story in Nevada, and it's a couple of, so the guy shoots at a police officer, shoots and wounds a police officer, jumps in his car, runs away, gets in an accident. Then he breaks into a woman's house where she's home with the children. And I love this paragraph. Shortly following the crash, dispatchers received a call from a woman saying an armed man had broken into her house. The woman said she stabbed him with a kitchen knife while protecting her and her children. That's freaking awesome in my world. I love this. I'm like, why didn't she stab him a few more times? But it turns into a hostage barricade situation. Now he's in this woman's home with her and her kids, and the police show up, and you have the whole negotiation thing and the perimeter thing. And are we going to do a dynamic entry? Or are we going to just know all this stuff? But, you know, you can hear the woman on one call. She says, please God, break down the front door and come in.
Yeah.
So, you know, eventually they get this guy. It's a 9 hour incident total, but I absolutely love the fact that he's in a bad way. Woman stabbed him. He broke into her house with a gun and she stabbed him. I don't know her name. Kudos to her. She should have done it another 10 or 15 or 20 times, whatever it takes. Man breaks in your house with a gun. You're protecting your children. Decapitate the guy. I don't care. Take care of your family. That's my favorite part of the story.
You know, and one thing I want to point out too with this this case, here was an ambush attack, and a suspect who was in a barricade situation with a hostage, and you see the extent to which officers go to make sure everyone goes home alive, including the suspect, and. I think sometimes that doesn't get spotlighted enough. Just how far officers are going to make sure that they can arrest the suspect. That it isn't about just neutralizing it. That they do have the well-being. They do have the well-being of the suspect in mind when they go into these situations, and you know, the priority is to make sure that the victim you know, is safe, but they're also have that for the suspect as well as well as for themselves.
Yeah, so when you look at the priority list, right, first and foremost, we're there to take care of the victims, protect them, the innocents, protect them, get them out, extricate them from any risk of threat or harm. Then we have to worry about the surrounding neighborhood, right? Because if the guy gets out of the perimeter, then he presents a threat to the rest of the neighborhoods. So we got to worry about the rest of the neighborhood, the surrounding area. We obviously want to take care of the officers, the deputies on the scene. We don't want to take any more risk than we have to. And then we worry about the suspect and his health and welfare and safety. We don't want him. We don't want to have to kill him. It's sometimes the only choice we have is neutralizing them is to do something fatal. But the amount of SWAT training today that is dedicated to less lethal tools, to things that, and understand we say less lethal. I can kill you with, I don't know, pick something, paintball. People play paintball all the time, but if you know the circumstances are wrong, you can catch one of them through an eye orbit and it hits you in the brain, you're dead. So less lethal is less lethal, but we spend probably, SWAT teams spend 90-95% of their time in use of force training with less lethal tools. And there's a plethora of them out there now. So the suspect, it's not like anybody goes in there wanting to kill the suspect. It's just sometimes a sad side effect of the actions that we have no other choice but to take.
Moving on.
I get off the soapbox.
Moving on to our next story. And this was going to talk about another two stories about the same topic. And this is about high-speed pursuits. First story is just a national story, actually, and how more and more local governments and state governments and police agencies are reversing course, and where they might have tried to eliminate or curb when police officers might engage in high speed chases. Now they're kind of walking that back and allowing officers to pursue suspects a little more frequently than they might have in the past. And then there was out of Illinois, the city of Aurora, it's actually just north of where I'm at, is trying to take care of combat suspects who flee, elude police, try to escape from traffic stops, what have you, by putting fines for that, increasing the penalty. Chases, high-speed pursuits have been something that, especially since the pandemic, when across the country, you're seeing more and more traffic offenses, serious traffic offenses of people fleeing traffic stops, what have you. And the balancing act police have to do as far as, you know, whether when they should engage in a chase that, you know, you're hitting 100 miles per hour or more, and when just to back off. I think for a while there, you saw a lot of departments basically saying, look, we're just going to stop at a certain point. You know, we let them go unless it's a violent offender. But I think you're seeing more and more now because of pushback from the public of that changing, and lawmakers and police agencies now saying, hey, you know what, officers do need to keep up with these chases, do it safely, but it shouldn't just be sort of a surrender, and hopefully we can use other means to apprehend these individuals.
Isn't it about time? And this is a frequency, right? We've seen it over decades where, society will empower law enforcement to crack down on crime. And then there'll be this outcry because somebody got hurt. Some criminal actually, there's an incident recently where, you know, the family's all up in arms because their brother, son, cousin, whatever, was shot and killed by the police. And oh, this poor innocent man fired 11 shots at a police officer before anybody shot him. Ain't nothing innocent about that. But we have this frequency, right, where the media stream, they turn things around. So we have great support for the police, and then we have the frequency of no support for the police. And we're coming out of one of those low points during the pandemic, early on in this current presidential administration, kind of towards the end of the last one. We've seen different things where the mainstream media has really attacked the police, and the police have lost a lot of support. And when that happens, you have all the politicians that want to look like they're trying to rein the police in or put a leash on them or muzzle them or whatever. And that's where you get all these laws going, no pursuit. And the lawyers love it, because then, you know, if nobody can sue a city for an accident if there's no accident because there was no chase, it's not the city's fault. So the lawyer's job is easy. By the way, the lawyer still gets paid. Yeah. And then you realize that this empowers crime. That you're actually telling the criminals, it's okay, commit your crime and run. And as long as you're running, nobody's going to pursue you. There's a no pursuit law. You're fine. You can get away. And then they realize crime starts to skyrocket, and we have the other end of the frequency. No, we can't be this permissive. We actually have to have our police do what police are supposed to do and chase and catch criminals. I'm loving seeing it. I'm wondering where the smooth out is going to be, how it's going to play out in the end, in the totality of it.
What do you mean by that? I'm not quite following as far as the smooth out.
So, like, you have the two different extremes, right? You have the you can't chase at all, or you can chase for anything, anywhere, no matter what. I'm wondering where the middle ground is going to be found. I'm wondering what the controls are. Like, we've never been able to chase nonviolent felons or misdemeanants across state lines. Like, if they can get out of state, they're good to go, which was always a problem for us in Maryland, because we were, if you got on Route 50, you were a couple of miles from the DC line. So if the guy could just stay in front of you and outrun you for a couple of miles, he could cross the DC line. He was out of state. You couldn't chase him unless it was for a felony. So then you get the guy on Route 50 who's dumb enough to go the other way, and he's going to run out of road at the Atlantic Ocean, which, that's still in Maryland. So it could be a traffic stop, and I could chase you all the way to the ocean some 2.5 hours later at 65 miles an hour. At any rate, I'm wondering what the middle ground is going to be. I'm wondering how the politicians and the lawyers and the community and the law and the police officers and deputies, I'm wondering how it's going to work out to, you can chase for this, you can't chase for this, you can chase for this, but here's your limits. That's what I mean. I wonder what the middle ground is going to be found.
You know, I wonder too if there is, when these laws and these restrictions and these new policies come through, is I wonder just how knowledgeable lawmakers and the public really is about what what the training is for police when it comes to
this. Don't delude yourself. They don't know anything about it. They don't
that's what
know
I mean.
About it. They just want to be judgmental.
But that's exactly the thing. One of the things that when I was worked for a local news website and covering police, I did one of those citizens academies. And I was just, I don't want to say, I guess I was surprised of just about how much the people who, these citizens who were attending this, really just came in and what an education it was for them, not just simply that they got to do the you know, a little bit of the same training, but just from the type of knowledge that they didn't have about how police operate. And I guess I wish that, again, like I said with the earlier story with the ambush and the barricade situation, I wish there was a way the public more and more really understood, the lengths of which police go to, you know, the training they have to tackle these, whether it be a barricade situation, whether it be a chase, that, you know, it's not simply, all right, you know, gun it. We're, you know, this is a movie. It's going to be Smokey and the Bandit. These officers have this training that they're falling back on. And, these procedures that are set up to, number one, protect the public. And I think that's gotten lost especially post George Floyd, as far as what police really do.
Yes, and you're 100% right. But
sorry, I guess slightly off topic there, but
it's all related. Excuse me, I'm doing two things. I'm looking at the two stories we have left to talk about in the clock.
let's move on to our next story. This is out of Missouri, where police pulled over St. Louis police pulled over an unusual driver, an 8-year-old who was behind the wheel of a car while the child's mother was in the back seat with a 3-year-old who the mother was unconscious and had the 8-year-old driving for her. It's both scary and sad for me to, you worry about the child's just immediate welfare as far as driving a car and his mother unconscious, and then also just going forward, both these kids now have to, being in a situation where clearly the home life is less than ideal.
And that's a huge understatement.
Yes.
You get a woman who lets her 8-year-old drive with a 3-year-old also in the car because she's passed out in the back seat. The reason I wanted to talk about this story is because it's a perfect example of how law enforcement along the way of the process of enforcing the law end up really protecting and serving the community, not only the 8-year-old and the 3-year-old that are in this car, but everybody else was on the road where some 8-year-old was driving.
Yeah.
There's an old joke and I'll make it and then we can move on. When my daughter got her driver's license, I joked that I wanted to get her, get a t-shirt that said, "I just got my driver's license. Be careful. Stay off the sidewalk." you got an 8-year-old driving a car. That is immensely dangerous in and of itself. It presents a threat to everybody in the car and everybody else he's driving by or around. So this is the perfect example of where enforcement action actually serves, protect and serve. Yeah. And that's something I love about that story.
Yeah. And moving on to our final story, this is out of Boston, where the Boston Marathon was this week, and video footage caught 4 officers helping a runner get across the finish line. The weather for race day was warm, hot for runners, and officials had seen participants in the medical tents a little bit more than normally they had seen in the past. And this footage, you see these officers helping getting this runner across, not only across the finish line, but into the arms of workers who were able to put, the footage kind of ends before you see it, but they were trying to get the runner into a wheelchair, and I'm sure make sure that everything was okay health wise. But this is the second one of these we've seen, a marathon on the West Coast where here they were officers, just working a race, and like you said, it's something that probably wasn't, they thought in the cards when they woke up that morning, but something I'm sure the runner, appreciates the effort that these officers went into.
Yeah, and this is the perfect example of protecting and serving. They helped this guy across the finish line. Don't know what his medical or health emergency is. I mean, it could have just been simply exhaustion. It could have been dehydration. It could have been an injury, whatever it was. What stopped him from laying down in the street? Nothing. But these officers helped him finish a marathon. And the only motivation they could have to do that is because he wanted to finish that marathon and they wanted him to feel that success, even if it was with assistance. So this shows a compassionate side of law enforcement most people don't pay attention to. Most people just simply ignore it. Cops are just out here to be mean. Well, here's four cops that didn't do a single mean thing. They showed some compassion. They showed support. They showed humanity. And they helped this guy cross the finish line and get him into a wheelchair where he can get whatever the medical coverage care was that he needed. All four of them. Kudos to these four officers. These are the kinds of stories I wish the mainstream media would put on TV every night, because this happens every day somewhere. Cops are helping people like this. Had a conversation with a young man yesterday. Loves the police. Wants to be a police when he grows up. Loves to watch cop shows. And then he'll put his finger out like it's going to go, get on the ground. I'm like, but that's, hang on a second. That's not the dominant thing that cops do. Cops help people. Cops give guidance to people. Cops play so many roles that have absolutely nothing to do with force or control or violence. And we just need to really emphasize that in society today and how people perceive law enforcement. I was raised as a child to look up to the guys in the blue uniforms, to find them if I was lost or I needed help, that they were the good guys. And too many parents don't teach that today. I can't tell you how many parents I had tell me, you be good or that police officer is going to take you to jail. And they're talking to a three-year-old. That's just frustrating as all hell. I get down on one knee with the kid and be like, look, you hold the phone. I'm not going to tell you your mom's a liar, but, you know, and you can't say that. Like, you know, your mother is right. You need to behave, but I'm not here to arrest you. I'm here to help you. And if you ever have a problem and you need assistance, you come find somebody like me. You come find somebody in this uniform and we're here to help you out. And, you know, but that's the one time they hear that. Compared to the thousands of times their mother threatens them with the police. It's a sad state of affairs.
You know, you talked about the kid as far as wanting to go into law enforcement, pointing the gun type of thing. Boy, that was one of the first lessons that my dad, you know, as an ATF agent, taught me about law enforcement was, it's not cop shows. That's not what it's like. It's helping first. It's not, you know, pulling your gun and getting into shootouts or car chases. It is about helping the public. And boy, from day one, my dad, that was the biggest thing is that you're there to help. That is your first job. And, and in a lot of ways too, it was, you know, his idea too was that, you know, having that passing along that idea of police are just there to help is kind of hoping that people would sort of pay it forward, is that everyone is kind of looking out for everyone else. And, you know, police are sort of that front line.
Yep. Well said, sir. Well said.
Thank you. And that wraps it up for us today. Thank you so much for listening, as always. As I kind of started this off, it was a very rough week for law enforcement. Our thoughts and prayers go out to all of the families and both the, you know, by relation and also the law enforcement families of those officers and deputies who lost their lives in the line of duty this week.
I'm with you there as well. I don't want anybody to lose their life in the coming week. So as you go into the weekend and the week, stay safe.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of The Lineup. Please remember, the opinions voiced are not those of Officer Media Group or Endeavor Business Media, but only those speaking those opinions themselves. Thank you and stay safe.